money, and if they could possibly steal or argue patents, they will. You know, it's all fair, it's love and economics. So I think there's been spying all over the place. Nowadays, we're less concerned with Russians spying on us. Nowadays, our major intellectual property theft it takes place in China.
And, Paul, what is your comment on it? And we're discussing the recent email that I have sent to you and to Dr. Roy, which is named Satellite Military Measures and Countermeasures of Today. Paul, back to you.
That article, that was the one with countless different types of drones and how everybody is... Finally, they find another country's drone, and then they copy it, they mass produce those, on and on. Yeah, well, I don't have much of an opinion, except all the countries should get together and stop making the drones. Build decent rockets to go to the stars, I think we'd be a lot better off. So basically, no comment. Back to you.
Okay, into action. So we have a Tomahawk missile that costs $2 million per missile. We have a Patriot Mark III interceptor missile that costs $4 million. We have AGM-158, which costs $1.2 million, and we have a Switchblade drone. And I pressed drone. That's a Switchblade 600 that costs $120,000. And then, recently we have a Lucas, L-U-C-A-S. And Lucas costs $35,000. So I remember Switchblades were offered to Ukrainians. So Switchblades were good in... locking on the radar signal and going to the source and eventually destroying the radar of the enemy, which was good, but it was 120,000. And we have right now a Ukraine that makes around 10,000 of drones per month. Different kinds of drones, the small one that was produced previously by Chinese companies and some of their own. And then there is, we're talking about Lucas. Lucas costs $35,000. It's reverse engineered version of Iran notorious Shahed 136 drone. And that Shahed was from 1970s, but then the sources says that Iran reverse engineered Top Gun anti-tank guided missile from US, the model number BGM-71 TOW missile. So it looks like Iranian took our... Well, the best word to say is reverse engineer. Okay, so they reverse engineered American technology. Then we took Shahid that was given to Russians, and Russians started manufacturing of it to make horror on Ukraine. So they're sending usually about 16 to 120 of their Shahid drones, which were previously Iran, and that's why we have a problem in Iran with them, even though that they do not have any Russian junk anymore because everything was destroyed. They still have a Shahid, and the Shahid is really nasty. That's why was my question. Are we going to have tanks or most of the military the hardware no longer usable because the drone can damage everything, Dr. Roy?
Well, only time will tell. It demonstrates repeatedly that over time, at least in this time frame, just because you have the biggest, heaviest, most expensive weapon doesn't mean it's the best in all situations. And so there are some situations that tanks, my guess would be, still are useful in war, but you can't just throw tanks at everything. These drones are incredibly less expensive, and it's kind of very difficult presently to protect your tanks and other weapons from the drones. So there might be some great inventions in the future that will lessen the impact of drones under some circumstances. I don't think every country should just kind of melt their tanks down for just iron and such. But I think the nature of war really always changes. People, again, repeatedly forget this. The weapons that won wars before the First World War were useless for the, cavalry was very important until it wasn't. So it's always a changing game, and the most foolish people in war are the ones who would depend upon what saved them in the previous war. That's not how technology and wars work.
Yeah, that was the thought that came to my mind when I was looking at the Super Mathematics. We need $2 billion to have healthcare repaired, at least in terms of kindergarten kids. And at the same time, we lost 16 U.S. military aircraft in recent conflict over Iran. 5 KC-135 that damaged by missile attack. And one F-35 stealth fighter that was hit by Iranian fire. Then we have two Sentry AWACS aircraft affected or destroyed during the action of freeing life of another pilot today. So, coming back to the subject, we have hold on. I had to refresh. So we had a situation at which drones becomes as cheap as $1,000 right now, and we have a continuous exchange of technology by chance, not by spying or taking the information. So we have, let's say, situation that Lucas. So we have a year 1970, Iran reverse engineered Top Gun, BGM-71, then Iran re-engineered Israeli Spike MR missiles captured by Hezbollah in Lebanon during 2006 Lebanon War. Then we have Iran jet-powered Shahed 171. It is another one. The previous one was 136. This one is 171. Okay, and that was Lockheed Martin RQ-170. And so what happened is Lockheed Martin RQ-70 Sentinel drone had strayed over the border from Afghanistan and landed in Iran 2011. I remember that was a big news at that time. They were so proud that they were able to get down. And then now we have a situation at which we have a new drone. But it appears that if we go to German door from 1980 that was a Dytron anti-radar. And that one was the ancestor of Shahid 136. But anyhow, I'm not saying that we're doing wrong, or I'm trying to go to the point, not at all. I'm talking about technology. But the thing is that a question that everybody is asking is himself, where we are going? Couldn't we use that money for, let's say, retirement fund for our retirees? Back to you.
Right.
Yeah, I heard someone else at the very end of Wesley's comment. If I'm not having delusions, please repeat yourself. Okay, I guess I'm having delusions, or there was some little strange bleed through of some gateway someplace. The problem is that nostalgia, I've never been a big fan of nostalgia, but it comes to me that nostalgia in warfare is can kill you. You know, I mean, nowadays the last thing that we need is a battleship, and yet some idiot came up with the brilliant idea of spending billions of dollars to build some battleships. This is the worst possible time for a battleship. I mean, there's a good reason why none has been built in 50 years, because they're out of date. They're inconsequential. You drop a couple of drones on them, and $1 billion goes down into the sea. So, but you know, why are we spending money? Why are we waging war? Well, unfortunately, because we can, because some people kind of want to show off that they're the boss of everyone, and so, you know, aggression. We've had bouts of aggressive behavior for almost ever in the West, and unfortunately, we have little tin soldiers who think that committing war crimes is an act of bravery these days. So we're in a very difficult situation, and unfortunately, people really hate this part. We kind of did it to ourselves, so, you know, blame us. You know, people have asked the question for over 50 years of, you know, how did Germany kind of fall into Nazi Germany? They did it one step at a time. You know, there'll always be a percentage of every country's population that are fascists, that are cruel, that are murderers, that are thieves, and occasionally people listen to them. And so, you know, it's the same situation. You know, why does Russia invade, you know, the Ukraine? You know, it's the same reason. Why does China have this hard-on for having Taiwan? They never had Taiwan before in the entire history of the Chinese Communist Party. Taiwan was a separate country. Historically, before they existed, it was part of China, but that's not their history. That's the history of China. But that's our lesser nature. That's our demons. We listen to instead of angels of our better nature. So that's life.
Comment.
Yes, Brian.
The only thing I could say to all of this, that this is not the USA that I grew up in.
I agree with you. It isn't. And, you know, if you shake people hard enough, unfortunately, they don't wake up. I think they'll wake up little by little, although there'll still be people around. You know, when Richard Nixon had to resign, there was still, I think, 30% of the population that kind of said, yeah, sure, what the hell, breaks the law? We don't care. You know, let him stay. So there's always going to be someone. You know, it's never going to be, you know, your next-door neighbor who's been arguing politics with you for the better part of 30 years is not going to come over and apologize. It's, you know, human beings don't work that way.
Right.
So thank you very much, gentlemen, for commenting on it. The reason I brought that subject to you was not really to discuss moral issues. It was Starlink and Starshield. Starlink is Starlink, and Starshield is mostly unknown. Starshield is for U.S. military, and it started in 2022. There was a specialized network was built specially for use of our military. And Lucas, the drone that cost $35,000, but Ukraine could do it probably for $1,000 or $2,000, because they don't have all of this overhead. That Lucas uses Star Shield. And the interesting story is because Lucas uses spread spectrum, so it's a frequency hopping technology. If Chinese would like to jam it, they would need, if we're talking about inverse square law. So maybe I go back to the inverse square law. So we have an antenna of the AM radio, and we have a certain amount of power, kilowatts of power on this antenna. And then we go a few hundred feet from that antenna, we can still see the antenna, and we measure the power that we have on our walkie-talkie, and then we see we have a half of a watt. And then we go further, we are not yet at the visible horizon line of sight, and we can still see the antenna, and we have a milliwatt. And then we go to the radio horizon, straight line of sight, and then we have a fraction of that would be had before, so that would be microwatts watts power. So by that token, if we're talking about spread spectrum, if China would like to jam Lucas, they would need one drone that has a battery. The battery has to support that drone and support the jamming device that has to have a certain power. And then due to inverse square law, the number of the power that is spread demand through the monopole antenna on that drone would be good enough just to jump a few hundred feet from left and right. So they would need a thousand and thousands of drones to be employed in order to jam it. So that's definitely something that is new in the market. If you have any comment on it, Dr. Roy.
Nothing particularly. I mean, there are measures, there are countermeasures. There is, it's whack-a-mole. It says the nature of battle is to come up with, if you're very nimble, is to come up with new ideas that make your adversary's weapons less useful. And eventually, they will. You know, everything has a countermeasure eventually. So it's just a matter of time and motivation.
Okay. Information. Russia is developing Zorky, which is domestic Starlink, eyeball of Elon Musk Starlink. Right, with terminals that should begin in 2026. They already sent few of them. Their existence in the space, airing to the junk all around. And they plan 300 satellites by 2027. China is developing laser and microwave-based anti-satellite technologies to counter Starlink and Starshield and multiple large-scale satellite constellations that would be QFAN or Thousand Sails. That's the name, Thousand Sails Network. And that network already has 100 satellites that was deployed with the goal of them being 15,000. There is another one which is GILWANK and SatNet network that is currently being tested, and that one is planned to have 13,000 satellites, and Hongo 3. The Hongo is a pretty much known metal industry machinery company, but they also do the network, and currently this network is planning stages and is expected to ultimately have 10,000 satellites operational. So now we're talking 10,000, 13,000, 15,000 whatsoever just from China by itself. Comparing to 300 satellites that I would say mostly would have application in Ukraine to replace Starlink that was cut off from Russia, because Russians start illegally to use Starlink, and then Elon Musk under the pressure decided to cut them off. Thank you very much, Dr. Roy, and to HGN. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Wes. That's it for tonight.
Yeah, that's it for tonight.
Okie doke. Thank you for your participation. Brian, you got anything for us tonight?
Kind of interesting. Artemis, they sent 4 astronauts. Well, I think they should have sent Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-il, and the Ayatollah Khomeini. Because when they get out into orbit and they look back at how small and delicate this planet is, perhaps they would think differently. I don't know. It's just a thought.
Well, it's a nice thought, it's a pleasant thought, but unfortunately, most likely, most, if not all of those people are sociopaths. So, you know, sociopaths don't think like you or I. They don't have empathy, they don't have sympathy. They just see us all as little pieces on a chessboard, and they move them to and fro. Kim Il-sung is obviously crazy. He's brought up, when his father passed away, rather than the news agencies reporting that he was sick and died, basically he just faded away from exhaustion and nothing else. You know, they told people that he bowled perfect bowling ball games and golf perfect golf games, and he was just perfect. So, you know, someone who took themselves so unseriously couldn't possibly be sane. So, you know, it sounds nice, but in practice, unfortunately, you're dealing with sociopaths acting out to be kind of king of the mountain. Even if you burn the mountain down, as long as you get to be the guy at the top of it, that's all that unfortunately counts to these people.
Yes, this is a good point, I have to admit. I just don't understand why Iran should not be permitted to have a nuclear capability. Because even if they used it, it would be mutually assured destruction. So no way you could win. And Putin and Kim Jong-il and Ayatollah, those are risky people to have nuclear weapons, yes. But, you know, again, it's a question of restraint. Because if they do something, okay, the army is behind them, they're going to be destroyed. So what's the sense of all of this I just don't see it.
Well, some might tell you that the strategy of nuclear weapons is not to use them, but to have them. It puts you in a different bargaining situation. If Iran had nukes, most likely none of this would be happening right now, because even though it's insane to fire them, you can't take that risk, so you leave them alone. And you know, this is what's going on in Pakistan and India and all these other countries that have admitted to having nuclear weapons. Israel, as far as I'm aware, does a bit of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. They don't ever publicly say that they have nuclear weapons, but everyone knows they have nuclear weapons. And so that puts you at a different level in negotiations. So the idea among some people is that they would rather try to decimate a non-nuclear country before it gets to have nuclear weapons, and the equations start to change. So that's my understanding of the tactics involved.
Case in point, Ukraine probably greatly regrets the fact that they handed over all those nuclear weapons back to them 30 years ago.
I am very sure that they are, and they should be. They trusted people, and you should never trust people. This was a guarantee. Russia guaranteed absolutely positively that they wouldn't do what they're doing right now. It only goes to show that you cannot take the word of a fallible human being. Unfortunately, those were, I guess, more optimistic days, and the rest of Europe kind of pressed them on the subject, because they, you know, any less countries that are nuclear capable is a safer world. But that was probably one of the more foolish things that Ukraine did.
I don't think they had much choice in the matter. That was the deal at the time. And it just became, well, changed due to Putin.
Well, you know, unfortunately, life is not a Star Wars episode, you know, where, you know, the deal has been altered, I think Darth Vader said. That's not legit. You know, I think it was the Hungarian Accords or something. And, you know, when you've proven yourself to not stand by your own word, I mean, he couldn't even use it as an excuse that it was the previous guy running Russia before he took over. It was him. So he's just a liar and a sociopath, and you can't trust anything that he says. So I'm sure Ukraine was kind of diplomatically forced. I don't think they were aggressively forced, but... At that time, I guess they were hopeful that Putin wasn't such a sociopath that he turned out to be. But that was not a great move on Ukraine's part. I mean, on paper it looked decent. You know, it was guarantees of perpetual peace. Unfortunately, perpetual peace lasted about 10-12 years.
A question.
You dropped out again, Leslie.
I have a question. Memorandum. There was Budapest Memorandum in 1994 when Soviet Union collapsed in 1990, and participants were Belarus, Kazakhstan, Ukraine. Well, Ukraine. It was about freedom of Ukraine. It was Russia, United States, and United Kingdom. And at that time, in this memorandum, United Kingdom said that the guarantee Ukraine sovereignty. United Kingdom was there, so United Kingdom actively is participating in that guarantee. And my question is, understanding word memorandum, just memory of something, and that doesn't mean anything. What is memorandum in terms of power? Back to you, Dr.
It most likely depends on the politics and the power struggle at the time. It's primary, you know, I mean, unfortunately, other countries are not very readily interested in fighting other people's wars. You know, I mean, NATO is an interesting contradiction in that, but for the most part, people kind of want to be left to themselves. If they're not directly involved in the situation, they don't want to risk their budget. They certainly don't want to risk their citizens. So, you know, getting a something, you know, ultimately, you know, what's legally binding in the world? There's all pretty much nothing. It's kind of a self-fulfilling guarantee. You know, if the powers that sign on to it are willing to actually do what they promise, then it works. Otherwise, there's no higher power. You can't take it to the world court and be sued and, you know, type of thing. So unfortunately, that's what the politics and diplomacy and what else have you is involved. Just because you have mutual agreements, those can be broken. There's nothing binding them perpetually and completely.
Okay, so enter HGM. So we have a Belarus and a Kazakhstan, which are puppets of Russia. And then we have a Ukraine that was in 1994 saturated, the most saturated country in the world, with atomic weaponry, with nuclear weaponry. So practically every few miles you had a warhead or many warheads. And then we have Russia and United States and United Kingdom. And they say, you give up your weapons, you will have your sovereignty, and we're going to stay on that you're going to be a country that has a freedom. And so Ukraine said, okay, fine. But we're not allowed to have any rockets, and Ukraine was the rocket country for Russia. So most, if not all, of the rockets were made in Ukraine. So they destroyed all of the machinery, all of the businesses that were doing that, all of the facilities whatsoever, and then they destroyed airplanes that were able to carry on nuclear weaponry, and silos, all of those silos that were in Ukraine having those warheads. But there were also special vehicles they were able to carry on that nuclear weaponry. So they destroyed them too. And then we have a situation in which President of the United States says, hey, you are in my White House. This is our house. And you have no cards. You have nothing to play with. And it's a problem. Because there was a treaty that was signed by the United States of America. So I'm not trying to be political. I'm trying to just see the technicality of what it means to have memorandum. Dr. Roy, back to you.
Well, but ultimately it is political. You're dealing with people who won't stick up for agreements even made by themselves, better yet than, again, a previous administration. So, you know, if they're not going to uphold their own, you know, if they're going to basically say, you know, this Canadian, trading agreement was obviously written by an idiot when it was written by himself, and so we simply cancel it, then all bets are out. Again, because who do you go to? You know, you go to the Martians who are running things now. No, there's no Russia, there's no Martians. So again, the World Court is a very limited-powered organization. It's basically default to might makes right. We are in the midst of a bunch of aggressors simply saying, we want it, so we're going to take it. And, you know, that's what gave us World War One and World War Two. And we've been out of that particular cycle until recently, when people who haven't picked up a history book decided to repeat history and see if they could make even a worse turnout occur.
Thank you very much, Dr. Boy, for your explanation, and I'm returning back to you.
Okay, let's then bring it back to Brian, because you started this particular discussion.
Well, you know, basically, in the end, I'll quote Albert Einstein, World War III will be fought with nuclear weapons, and World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones.
Yes, I'm familiar with that line. Don't know. There's so many interestingly different ways that we can kill each other these days. So, you know, it may not be nuclear weapons. It may be biological weapons. It might be poisons. There's an almost infinite number of technologies that we brilliant humans can develop to kill ourselves.
It's amazing that we all can't do things that are for the betterment of mankind. That man is essentially, I would say, hardwired to be bad rather than good.
Well, I don't know if I'd exactly say hardwired to be bad. We're hardwired to take advantage of each other, to be aggressive towards each other, to kind of fulfill our wants and our needs with not that much bothering us about the other people that are damaged in the, these delusions of grandeur, these often very fascistic type of stories that once upon a time we were the master race, but then lesser races bred with us and contaminated us, and they're filthy and disease-ridden, and we have to get rid of them. And, you know, this seems to be a perpetually replaying fairy tale that humanity comes up with as an acceptable rationalization for fascism, at least for the last, more than 100 years. It's been a go-to, it never particularly made a great deal of sense to me personally, because you have to sort of make up a fake history. You know, the Germans were the master race. Well, the Germans were small tribes wandering about being smacked silly by the Romans. They weren't a particularly great empire. Matter of fact, the German empire was probably the first institution. Up until then, they were splintered all over the place. And, some historians even have problems quite understanding what makes you particularly a German tribe versus a not exactly German tribe. So, but you have to make up those stories, and they do it all the time. It was a lot easier for Mussolini, because Mussolini had the Roman Empire to use as a prop. And the Russians used Rome also as a prop. They were the second or the third Rome or some foolish nonsense like that. So, these weird stories of once upon a time they were superhuman creatures who the rest of humanity was just filth and garbage and germs and such. It keeps on being used over and over again, despite the fact that all this is horseshit.
Okay. Can we change topic now?
reprieve.
Thanks. Just a question that entered my mind today. With a off-center fed dipole antenna, is there any way to go ahead and create a dB gain rather than no dB gain?
Well, you have to understand that in the case of antennas, gains and losses are not actually the same thing as the active amplifiers have. All that that means is that there are some places where the RF emissions are focused and other places where they're less focused. So you'll never get an antenna that has a gain of over, you know, zero decibels of 100%, and almost always it's going to be less than 100% because all real life antennas have some degree of inefficiencies and losses. So with that in mind, you will develop radiation patterns depending upon where you how off center it is and where you position the antenna.
Okay, let's say, for example, you have a Yagi. Now, that has a degree of gain, doesn't it?
Again, it does not have an absolute gain. It has a relative gain in that the parasitic elements, the reflectors and the forwarders will kind of pinch the RF field and increase, focus it at a narrow path. But the absolute amount of electromagnetic radiation that comes off the antenna is not greater than what you put in. Otherwise, you violate the laws of thermodynamics and conservation of mass energy.
Agreed. I just wanted to know if there was any trick using loading coils to go ahead and perhaps turn OCF antenna into like another dB or two of gain, but I guess not.
Well, again, not in the case of absolute. In the case of rearranging the radiation pattern, you have to kind of put it in an antenna simulator and factor in the actual losses, because loading coils will introduce an inefficiency. There's a resistive loss of power, but it will modify the positioning of the nodes and the peaks of radiation coming off of the three-dimensional object that is the antenna.
Well, that makes sense to me, Roy. Okay, well, thank you very much for your explanation. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Brian, and thank you, as always, for your participation. This is Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, AC2GS, with the Limewire Technical Net. We're still open for business. Theoretically, we still have a half hour if anyone wants to take advantage of it, so it's leave it up to you guys. As always, this is not a broadcast. This is not a monologue. This is, at the very least, a dialogue, and sometimes a few other people join into the round-robin conversation. So we're still open for business. If anyone has any questions or topics for discussion, hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
Are you sure we would be open for business? Because it's business, after all. Long time no see, Mr. Roy, Kitty 2 ODB.
Hello, Craig. How are you today?
Well, happy Easter to you and your family. Got back from a family gathering, actually.
Oh, very good. Thank you very much. You're kind of a little dropping out of the repeater for some strange reason. It gets a little noisy, then you drop out, then you come back pretty good. So it seems to be, are you in the car?
I'm still on an HP. I still haven't yet to install the stuff in my new car yet. It'll come down to it eventually. It's just a matter of when.
Okay.
Yeah. I really want to get it done at some point. As far as topics, I actually want to now tell you. To my mind, here's something to ask you. Remember when you once told me about building custom applications and things like that?
In terms of what kind of an application?
Preferably a mobile app that can be tied directly into YouTube's RCMP to read live data.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, you know, if you have the software skill set, there are people working on all kinds of interesting things. You know, it just depends upon your level of expertise and your creative nature. There's a lot of applications that would be very, very useful that haven't been done yet because no one with the ability decided to expend the amount of energy and time producing it. You know, there are people still working on digital voice mode, M17 for some reason. You know, they're open source. That's kind of their only claim to fame right now as far as I can see, is they're basically just yet another voice over RF type of phenomena. You know, it's another version of the MR or Fusion or D-Star. The only extra is that it's open source so that you don't have to pay any research and development company to use their patents.
Happy to tell you, I was able to develop my own app that streams. It has the chat. It has everything. I have remote control OBS so I can send the screen to the desktop. It takes over the key. I can literally shut down the phone and not have to worry. The screen will stay up. I have Infinity Focus, I have the flashlight, I've got pretty much everything.
Oh, okay, it sounds very interesting. What I could hear of it, unfortunately, like I said before, every so often you just kind of go off into the noise floor and then come back. So what little I heard sounds very interesting. How much time did you spend developing that?
About 2 to 3 weeks, and I even put the app to the test during Luminous at Epcot when I was away in Disney World this past year. It was very fun, except I had to drive back. Not something I really wanted to do, but first time in 20 years because of all the bad weather, no alternative flights, and having to lose my A day because of it, because I wanted to spend my last day relaxing home. So, yeah, my app was working pretty well. There's still stuff I got to work on with it. I'm actually trying to fix my picture icon. You can take a picture while in stream, and then holding it down for a second takes a screenshot with all the icons. The only thing was I'm having orientation issues on it, so I'm still trying to figure that out. And I actually coded this app using Replit. It is literal AI. Any app you have in mind, and it builds it out for you.
Oh, okay. I assume it's an Android app?
Yep. I could put it into iOS, but then I'd have to restructure the whole native camera, because that's the only way to get the native camera controls working, like your flashlight, exposure controls, normal and ultra-wide. Infinity Focus is the real prize. And it took a couple of tries to get it working, because Infinity is not really is supposed to do is it's a combination of manual and locked, but really I actually ended up just having it mimicking locked properties. So manual is you're setting the focal length of focusing to the farthest distance, and then if you click locked, it just locks no matter what it's set to. Infinity, I have it set up to focus in the center of the screen and then lock itself. So no matter how far you zoom in, it's always locked at its maximum distance, hence infinity focus.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah. And, AI has, we've been discussing AI at the top of each TechNet for at least a couple of years now. So it's interesting to see how you're using it. A lot of people are using it all kinds of different ways. Some of the worst ways have been people tell me that relatives kind of use them as therapists, which I don't think is a good idea, especially with the occasional stories of people who basically suicided themselves after their AI told them that that would probably be a good idea.
Yeah, but I'm really happy with how this app is turning out. There are a couple of other things that I want to implement it, into it as well. For starters, I have it wired up exactly like Stream, where I could create a stream on the app. But really, the more appropriate approach is to do custom, where you punch in the stream key and that's what starts the stream. Now, mine actually doesn't have a three-step process to end the stream. It just asks me when I hit the stop button, because that's what I asked it to do. When you start the stream, you hit the side button, the record button, that just is like a stop button. Now, when you click it, it'll ask you, do you want to end the stream completely or just stop it on this device? Basically telling it, I'm not going to send any more data, but not like end it completely. And so essentially you're pausing the stream. That's what I have it set up to do.
Oh, okay. What type of streams have you configured it for?
I do all of my railroad stuff with it, but I've also streamed stuff like Disney World and such, which everybody's now been hearing they actually want to ban the streaming in Florida. I mean, they've done it in Tokyo, but I highly doubt they'll do Florida because there'll be a lot of backlash and lawsuits about it, but keep in mind it is private property after all. Really, it's commercially that they're trying to stop, but really, no. Really ever caused a problem when it comes to streaming, as long as you're just doing the right thing and nothing dumb. But yeah, with the ability to use a custom app, you control it all, because the only thing you get out of ordinary software is a flip button and a mute button. That's it. Like, no ability to turn down the exposure if you're in, like, bright areas and things like that. It's just not really doable. So that's the ability of using custom software, is you control it all.
Yeah, very good. Well, you got to kind of understand where Disney is coming from. They have a big nut that they have to pay on all these things. The results of their streaming service, their own streaming service, is kind of iffy at this time, and so. They could, they probably would love to squeeze equity out of everything imaginable. And as you mentioned, you're in their property, so they have a much broader ability to control what you do there than if it was a public place.
Yeah, I hear you. The cool thing about my app, talking with my cat here. Yeah, the interesting thing about some apps is you wire it up to OBS, remotely control it, and you can send the stream to the desktop and then shut your phone down and not have to worry about it, because you're running scenes remotely on the app, and then OBS will see those commands and interpret them to what your viewers are seeing. Like if you need to go to the restroom or you're going someplace private that you can't show on, it's not like you could pause the stream and risk viewer abandonment. Just put it in BRB mode and then just take it back when you're ready.
Yeah, that shouldn't be a big problem. I mean, you just switch scenes.
AD2OGB, the way it works is when you connect to OBS and you send it to the desktop, you're telling OBS, okay, I'm going to hand off my stream, and then my app is going to say that OBS is streaming. Do you want to take it back or end the stream? So down below in the remote control menu, you can select different scenes. You can select, like, photo scenes or video scenes, and then it'll literally play them back in the stream, and then you are able to take back the stream. I actually just had it wired up, so I don't have to deal with server-based switches. I can send it to the desktop on one device and take it back on another as long as I'm on the same version.
Now, that's interesting. I think someone called out your call sign about 2-3 minutes ago. If there's someone who did that, if you want to repeat yourself. Okay, I thought I heard someone call out OGB. Anyway, that sounds interesting. Are you planning to share that with other people, or are you going to keep it to yourself?
It's an interesting name for the app, and it's private right now. There's still stuff I got to do with it, so just for me, called iStream You Watch. The letter I, and then stream, and then the letter U, and then watch. That's the name of it, all one word. But yeah, it's just for me right now. But yeah, I'm really surprised that I was able to pull off something that one of my guys in Florida also did, but he had his coded in manually. And we were even having a funny topic about the Infinity Focus, because he's on an older version since he's not able to get it working, and he knows, I guess, a lot of people that were able to help him out with it. And it's like when somebody's trying to build out a version and suddenly it doesn't work and they get the version, they're like to their developer, this version doesn't work, and they're like, okay, I'll look at it, and it's back to the drawing board. But mine, I was able to build it out ridiculously quick, and with AI, you're still bound to make mistakes, so you got to be more specific. More on the whole remote control. When you send it to OBS, when you send it to the desktop, because I forgot to bring this up. So when you send it to the desktop, you're telling OBS, I'm going to give you the stream, and it takes over the stream key. That's the trick in even in being able to keep the stream alive, because just connecting it to OBS does nothing. You have to put in the code to intercept the stream key and then send over, otherwise just sending it to the desktop by itself won't do anything.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. But, yeah, I mean, manually programming versus telling an AI to do things is a couple of orders of magnitude of difficulty different. I used to write software, and I would put in new features, and sometimes the new features would break the old features, and you know, I mean, I finally got to the point where I was rewriting little bits and pieces of it a couple of times a week, and you know, it got to be too much of a Swiss Army knife for me, especially when I did something that unknown to me broke it, and no one bothered to even tell me about it. So I said, well, look, if they're not even testing it, if they're not using it, if they're using the old one, then so be it. I'll leave them with the older one and retire it, and I finally did that. So, but, yeah, it was a very satisfying thing when you roll your own.